A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling, well, maybe the biggest question of all, happiness.
Right. And the strange thing is, if you ask 10 people to define it, you'll probably get 10 different answers. Is it a good mood? Is it satisfaction?
It's the ultimate goal, and yet there's this weird paradox, especially in developed countries.
Mm-hmm. We have more wealth, more stability than ever before in history, but anxiety, stress, dissatisfaction, those rates are all going up.
It really suggests that we're chasing something, but maybe we've got the map wrong. We're chasing the wrong thing entirely.
Exactly. And that's why today our mission is to dive into the work of the philosopher Daniel M. Hebron and his book, Happiness.
Because he argues that the very definitions we use in psychology and self-help are just, well, they're incomplete.
He thinks we need a total reset on how we even think about well-being if we ever want to achieve it.
So, to get started, who is Daniel Hebron? What makes his perspective so unique?
Well, he's an American philosopher at St. Louis University. He specializes in ethics and the philosophy of psychology.
But he's not just stuck in an ivory tower.
Right. Not at all. And that's what's so interesting. He deliberately bridges that really rigorous old school philosophy asking, you know, what is happiness, with the actual empirical data from social scientists who are out there measuring this stuff.
So he connects the theory with what's actually happening to people.
Precisely. Most writers are either purely philosophical and disconnected from data, or they're all about self-help and just accept the current definitions without question.
Hebron stops and says, hang on. Before we try to measure happiness, are we even sure we're measuring the right thing?
Yeah, he's more of a critical guide for our thinking than a life coach.
So let's get to his central idea. If you've ever felt like your life looks great on paper, but you still feel, I don't know, a bit restless, is going to resonate.
He argues very clearly that happiness is not just fleeting pleasure. That's the old hedonism idea.
And it's also not just a mental scorecard, which is the life satisfaction view that's so popular today.
Instead, he proposes that happiness is a deep, kind of holistic and enduring emotional state, a disposition.
Not a moment, but more like the internal climate of your life.
He gives it a great name, psychic affirmation.
Psychic affirmation. I like that. So it's a positive emotional response to your life as a whole.
Yes. It's the background music that's always playing, not just the occasional loud, exciting song.
And the goal of his work is to give us a better model,
yeah,
right? One that can help with our own choices, but also with things like public policy.
Exactly. And he says this emotional state has three core dimensions. They are attunement, engagement, and endorsement.
Okay, so before we build up his new idea, we have to tear down the old ones. First up, hedonism. Happiness is just pleasure minus pain. What's wrong with that?
Well, put simply, we care about more than just feeling good. We care about where the feelings come from.
The source matters.
The source matters. And Hebron uses that famous thought experiment from Robert Nozick, the experience machine.
Ah, right. Remind us how that works.
Okay, so imagine a machine you can pour into for the rest of your life. It guarantees you a life of pure, pre-programmed bliss. You'd feel like you were succeeding, falling in love.
But none of it would be real. It's all a simulation.
Exactly. And the fascinating thing is, almost everyone says no. They wouldn't plug in.
Because we want our lives to be authentic. We want our achievements to be, you know, real, not just a feeling manufactured by a machine.
A life of mindless pleasure, even if it feels good, just lacks the depth we intuitively know a happy life needs.
Okay, that's a pretty strong case against pure pleasure seeking. But what about the other big one, the life satisfaction theory, the 1 to 10 scale?
Right, and this is where Hebron's critique is maybe its most powerful. He says that model is just too cognitive. It's too detached from how we actually feel.
You see that disconnect all the time.
All the time. Someone can look at their life and say, oh, I got the job, the house, the partner, I should be happy.
And they'd rate themselves an 8 or a 9 out of 10.
But underneath, they feel hollow or anxious or just alienated from it all. They're running on fumes.
And why does that happen?
Because our judgments are just so unreliable. They're unstable. If I ask you how satisfied you are right after you got a raise, you'll give a higher number than if I ask you right after you saw your neighbor's new fancy car.
So it measures our fleeting opinion of our life, not the deep emotional experience of living it.
That is the crucial distinction.
Okay, so with those old ideas cleared away, let's build up Hebron's theory, happiness as this deep emotional state.
Right, this disposition made of those three parts: attunement, engagement, and endorsement, AEE.
Let's break those down. What's the first one? Attunement.
Attunement is the peace component. It's about tranquility, confidence, that feeling of being at home in your own skin.
So like psychic restfulness, the absence of that constant low-level anxiety.
Exactly. It's feeling safe and stable in your own being. You don't realize how vital it is until it's gone.
Okay, then we have engagement. That sounds more active.
It is. That's the flow component. It's about vitality, being absorbed and interested in your life. It's the opposite of boredom or apathy.
So being really present and into what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And finally, you have endorsement.
Which sounds like giving your life a big thumbs up.
It's the yes component. It's joy, gladness, a wholehearted feeling that you embrace your life. You're not conflicted about it.
I really like that music analogy we talked about. Happiness isn't a single loud note of pleasure. It's the rich, continuous chord playing in the background, made up of that harmony of A, E, and E.
That's a perfect way to put it.
But wait a minute. If happiness is this deep internal state, isn't that almost impossible to measure? How can you use that for something like public policy if you can't just ask about it on a survey?
That's a really important question. And Hebron admits it's difficult to measure, but he insists that we have to get the philosophy right before we worry about the measurement.
So we've been measuring the wrong thing, even if it was easy to measure.
Exactly. He says we can't measure AEE with one question, but we can measure the conditions that reliably produce it. And that's where the data comes in.
So let's apply this AEE lens. Hebron warns, we're all pretty bad at predicting what will actually make us happy.
We're terrible at it. It's called effective forecasting. We just adapt to new things so quickly.
Okay, so let's take money. What does his framework tell us about money and happiness?
Well, the data is clear. Money is absolutely essential for happiness when it's lifting you out of poverty. But its positive effect drops off really sharply once your basic needs are met.
And why is that?
Because money is fantastic for buying attunement. It gets rid of the stress of scarcity, the anxiety about bills. It buys peace of mind.
But it's not so good at the other two.
Right. It does very little to guarantee deep engagement, like meaningful work or that wholehearted endorsement of your life. It can't buy you purpose.
Now contrast that with relationships. Social connection is always the number one predictor of well-being.
And through this lens, you can see why. Relationships hit the jackpot. They deliver on all three.
How so?
They give you security and a buffer against stress. That's attunement. They are the source of shared joy and love. That's endorsement.
And you do things together. You have shared projects. That's engagement.
It's the whole package. The framework really shows why it's the how we live, not just the what we have.
This leads to another really crucial philosophical point he makes, one that goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks.
Yes. The difference between happiness and what they called eudaimonia, or the good life.
So his definition of happiness is the psychological state, but that's not the whole story of a life well lived.
Exactly. Think of the happy fool idea. This is someone who might be genuinely happy. They feel peaceful, engaged, joyful. Their AEE is great.
Right.
But their life is built on something shallow or delusional or even morally bankrupt. They might be happy, but you wouldn't say they are flourishing.
That is such a vital distinction for all of us to think about. Happiness is a huge part of a good life, but a good life also needs things like virtue, meaning, morality.
Yes. You shouldn't trade meaning for comfort. It makes you ask a tougher question. Is my life just pleasant, or is it genuinely good?
This really is a complete shift in thinking. Let's try to boil this down into some high-level takeaways for everyone listening.
I think the number one lesson is that happiness is multidimensional and holistic. It's not a quick fix. It's this internal alignment of peace, flow, and joy attunement, engagement, and endorsement.
And the second one, which is a real call for self-honesty, is the insufficiency of cognitive judgment. Stop mistaking your own rational opinion about your life for the actual emotional experience of living it.
Right. Don't let your checklist of accomplishments fool you if you're feeling empty inside.
Third, there's the paradox of modern prosperity. Focusing on economic growth alone isn't enough because money mostly just solves for attunement.
Mm-hmm. And in chasing it, we can sometimes undermine the things that give us engagement and endorsement, like community and meaning.
And finally, and this is so important, the social nature of well-being. Your happiness isn't just some solo project.
Not at all. It's deeply shaped by your community, your economic security, your environment. Advocating for things that help everyone, like strong social safety nets, is actually a way to boost everyone's personal happiness.
That's an incredibly powerful way to look at it.
It really is.
And Heybrun's writing is just full of these memorable lines. Let's touch on a few of the core ideas.
There's one that I think sums up his entire theory. He says, "Happiness is not a judgment you make about your life. It is a way of being in it."
I love that. It's a state of psychic affirmation. It shifts the whole focus from your head to your, well, your whole being.
It really does. And then there's another one about our own role in this. The quality of our attention determines the quality of our experience.
That's all about mindfulness, isn't it, Nick? If your attention is always scattered or you're always comparing yourself to others, you're actively destroying your own attunement.
No matter how good your life looks from the outside, you control the input.
And the last one, linking it all back to the bigger picture.
Individual happiness and social health are not separate concerns, but intertwined realities.
A huge reminder that public policy is well-being policy. Things that reduce stress for everyone, like safe communities, directly improve the internal state of millions of people.
So this isn't just abstract philosophy. You can actually use this AEE model to make decisions in your own life right now.
Okay, so how? How can someone listening use this framework?
Well, think about a big decision, like a career change. Instead of just chasing a higher salary, you can ask better questions.
Like,
will this job improve my attunement by reducing my commute or financial stress? Or will it boost my engagement by letting me use my skills in a way that feels meaningful?
It changes the criteria from just external markers to internal sustainability.
And it prompts more self-awareness. Instead of just asking, am I happy? You can check your internal climate. What's my general disposition been lately? Anxious or at peace? That's attunement. Bored or absorbed? That's engagement.
Conflicted or wholehearted? Endorsement. It gives you a much clearer map of where you're thriving and where you might be struggling under the surface.
Exactly.
You know, if I had to pick one thing that really surprised me about this work, it was how powerfully he dismantles the life satisfaction model. It's so common, you just accept it, but you don't realize how easily it lets you lie to yourself to rate a life highly that you don't actually enjoy living.
For me, the thing that will stick with me is that crucial distinction with eudaimonia. It's a reminder to not just chase feeling good.
Right.
A genuinely meaningful life might involve struggle. It might involve facing difficult things. And that complexity is okay. It's part of flourishing. We shouldn't sacrifice virtue just to feel comfortable.
It's not about maximizing a good feeling. It's about aligning your deepest emotional state with a life of meaning and authenticity. Daniel Heybrun really has given us a much better compass.
A powerful perspective indeed. We really encourage you to think about your own life through this lens of attunement, engagement, and endorsement.
What stands out to you about your own disposition? Think about that until our next deep dive. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.